Good morning.
This week
we will begin another series on the far reaches of heart and mind. Far reaches of heart and mind. Dr. David Fontana has written that our conscious mind is only a small part of our mental life, the tip of the iceberg that stretches down into unfathomable depths and then at the same time reaches up into the heavens and what lies beyond. I think that is a definitely an adequate description, not a definition, but a description of mind. It's so vast. It's so vast. And Socrates' inscription to know thyself has everything to do with that. Knowing the mind, and I would include the heart. The Oriental language has a word which means both mind and heart. In the English language, we separate those two. But if we were to think of one word that would mean all of who we are, both above, outside, and below, why don't we just call it mind? Mind. So it's not only the thoughts that we think. D.H. Lawrence said it very, very well, I believe, when he said, "There is the other universe of the heart of man and woman that we know nothing of, that we dare not explore. A very strange gray distance separates our pale mind still from this pulsing continent of the heart of man and the heart of woman. Forerunners have barely landed on the shore, and no man knows, no woman knows, the mystery of the interior, where darker still than Congo or Amazon flows the heart's rivers of fullness, desire, and distress." That's powerful, isn't it? Yet another superficial hour on Sunday. A useful map of the mind has been given to us by Western psychology, but it's hard to find, really, a map of the total mind. In fact, for the most part, when psychology even thinks of something called the unconscious, oftentimes psychologists think that the unconscious are just all those instinctual drives that we best not think about, or that those places within the self that we need to kind of recognize that are there, but steer away from that. But I'm going to suggest to you something else. Freud was certainly helpful in his beginning to map the mind. He started off by saying, well, there are three levels of mind. First would be the conscious mind, okay? And that is what we're all hopefully thinking about right now. Whatever holds our attention. And I know sometimes I hold your attention for about 15 seconds, 1 minute max. But whatever occupies our mind at a given moment is what is called the conscious mind. And often we minimize mind and we think that it is only that, the conscious mind, the mind that is thinking upon a particular idea or thought or object. Okay, and that's the conscious mind. And it's very useful, of course. Without the conscious mind, we could never have gotten into our cars and realized that it was Sunday and come here to spend some time together. Without our conscious mind, we will not determine and make choices and will certain things. So the conscious mind is very, very important, but it's only one level of mind. The next level down, if you will, and up, the next level would be the pre-conscious mind. And Sigmund Freud had certainly understood what the pre-conscious mind was all about. And the pre-conscious mind are simply those memories that kind of come flooding in when someone mentions a word that we have in our memory bank. For instance, right now, if I said house, every one of us would have all of a sudden preconscious memories that would kind of bubble up. And each of us would think of certain things, perhaps the house that we live in. Or if I would say car, we would all associate that with other experiences. Or if I would say friend, everybody here would say, oh yeah, I have so-and-so is a friend of mine. Okay, and we would take that storage, if you will, of information that exists in our heads. And we would say, oh yes, I see. That would be the pre-conscious mind. And all of us have a, if you will, a kind of a superficial kind of data bank. An encyclopedia whereby we associate thoughts, but right now we're not thinking of those. Right now we are simply thinking about a particular person, place, or thing, or thought, or idea. That's conscious mind. Preconscious mind would be things that come up, that bubble up. And the third level Dr. Freud talked about was the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind. And Sigmund Freud, however, only named half of the unconscious mind, and that's very crude to say half, but we'll go ahead and say that. He named half the unconscious mind, which he called the personal unconscious. And the personal unconscious were all those forgotten memories that have to do with our emotions and feelings. And only through hypnosis or some kind of psychotherapy or psychoanalysis or analysis of our dreams, would we find that level of mind called the personal unconscious. Okay? And he suggested, of course, that it would be important for us to go there to find what exists in the personal unconscious. Because if we did not, we would be governed by a lot of those forces that we would not recognize. A lot of our decisions would be based, for instance, on what is stored in the personal unconscious. Someone, for instance, doesn't go into an elevator. They don't know why, but they're afraid. That exists in the personal unconscious, the reason why. Or let's say someone is out with a friend, and all of a sudden a fear comes up and emerges out of nowhere. It's personal unconscious. Or we'll get anxious or excited when we're in a particular place and we don't know why. Or that feeling that some of us get when we're anxious or depressed, but we can't name it. It's sort of that free floating anxiety or free floating depression or downness or blues, and we kind of feel bad about ourselves sometimes when we feel that way. Like, why? I don't know why I feel this way. So many folks come to counselors or psychotherapists or even minister or priests or rabbis or some form of counselor to find out what's going on here. I don't know. I just, it's kind of general. And the reason why, of course, that it feels like we can't name it or pinpoint it, it's because it exists in that deeper place that Freud called the unconscious mind. And unconscious is just a symbol. It's not meaning when we're unconscious, necessarily when we're sleeping. It's what goes on there in the unconscious, yes indeed. But it's not just nothing, a void. The unconscious is where a whole world exists. And so when we begin to touch upon places that are painful for us, strategies, remember last week, a lot of us have spent a lot of our life developing very subtle strategies to deal with the unconscious material in our life that is too painful. We've developed a lot of strategies. Some of those strategies have been chemical strategies. Some of those strategies have been relationship strategies. Okay? Some of those strategies have been work strategies. Some of those strategies have been simple disassociation, like sleeping a long time. Right? Some of us who may sleep and waste, you know, 3 or 4 more hours of our day, you know, that's a simple dissociation, going into the dream state. Simple dissociation. Simple dissociation would be when I fly up into my mind and figure things out, and I intellectualize. When I have an opportunity to stay in my stomach or the abdomen or the place of my lungs and breathing, the place where a lot of my anxiety lays, because that's the pulsing continent that D.H. Lawrence was talking about, where very few really explore. Only the true seekers want to even deal with that, right? Those who don't say, well, I don't need therapy, just my husband does. Or my wife does. You know, if they would fix themselves and get better, then everything would be okay. But everybody has one of them. And that's a personal unconscious. Okay? So there's not one person that would not benefit from some form of feedback getting. I don't know, you know, what we want to call that. But where we would get honest feedback, where we'd be able to sit with someone without shame or embarrassment, where we would feel safe enough to relax our ego, okay? Because then we would get out of the conscious and preconscious material, but we would go further into the personal unconscious. And we would relax then our ego, relax our control. Now we perhaps maybe understand what surrender is really about. Okay. In our culture, we have a real poor understanding of surrender, don't we? Surrender, Dorothy! Or the white flag, you know. I surrender! But we don't really have... I don't think we have at least a ready-at-hand association of the word surrender that has something to do with relaxing control of the ego, letting go of that need to control through the conscious mind and will, and let what is going to happen with our knowledge and wisdom. We don't do our. I believe that's core 101 surrender. Now it's not this kind of thing. I surrender to my higher power. That always kind of scares me when I hear that, especially only after someone has been, you know, sober for 2 weeks. If someone happens to be going into this kind of therapy, chemical addiction type therapy. I've totally surrendered to my higher power. But as soon as we feel a little better, a little bit more frisky, right? As soon as we get feeling better physically and clear out our mind a little bit, then we think that the thing that we need to do is take control again. Right? And our society really encourages total control. They don't encourage self-mastery, but they do encourage total control. You see, for self-mastery, one has to go into these different levels of conscious, into the personal unconscious where our pain is, and I'm even going to a deeper place where I am really very, very enthusiastic about, And that's the collective unconscious. Okay, that's beneath the personal unconscious. And in the collective unconscious, and that was what Jung had discovered to Freud's dismay, Jung discovered through his case histories that people kept talking about very, very big realities like God and angels and these big symbols like circles and squares and triangles and archetype universal concepts like hero and father and mother and child. You know, and that these had deeper force than just one's personal memory. That these symbols had incredible power. That they had to do with the whole of humanity, not just one's personal history. And so Jung called that the collective unconscious. And that would be, of course, the deepest level of mind. Now, last week, I shared with you Montagu Ullman's, I believe, great insight, is that the second coming has to do with the resurrection of the unconscious. Now, what that might have to do with is our exploring ourselves, taking Socrates and Jesus and Buddha seriously to know ourselves. So it's not that we're sick and we have to go get therapy, which may be the case, but that's not the... I mean, the real project is when we go into our deeper layers of self, we will get in touch with material that is overwhelming and that we don't have control over. We are so arrogant in our culture because we think that we have total control because we might know something intellectually with our conscious mind, right? And all of our subjects that we studied, and I've spoken to you about this, from grade one, from kindergarten, had to do with control and that conscious mind of ours. Nobody ever said, now children, we're going to delve into our personal unconscious. Which means, what kind of day have you had today? What kind of day? Well, I had a lousy day today, you know. I got up and I didn't want to go to school because I'm scared of Timothy and Jim because they're going to beat me up after school. But most kids didn't really do that. What did they do? They came to school and the teacher may say, well, what's wrong with you? And the student said, I've got a stomach ache. Or I've got a headache. Right? And what the kid was thinking, you dummy, you can't hear the real thing, so I'll just give you this and you'll let me get out of here. Right? And so the teacher goes, oh, you have a stomach ache or you have a headache. Okay, you can go to the infirmary. Or you'll go to the place that you shouldn't go when you feel that way. When you feel infirm, you feel out of control of your life, things aren't well with you. So this is bad, so you must be excluded from the class. Right? Rather than saying, well, how are you feeling? Let's talk about it. Now, of course, alternative schools today, wherever they happen to be, they talk about there are actually alternative schools that do exist with names like Montessori and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, problem is that if sick folks, you know, are leading these things, I don't care what it's called, we won't be able to go into those places unless someone has done their own work, right? If somebody's done their own work, then we can go into those places to know ourselves, to accept ourselves, to forgive ourselves. And even more than that, but to allow for our destiny to emerge, because I do believe we have even deeper levels that are a part of the collective unconscious that are waiting for our attention. And D.H. Lawrence certainly has given us a hint of that. So we get to the deepest level of the unconscious that's called the collective unconscious. We are in the realm of symbols. Now, you know, like the circle, square, and the triangle, etc. Now, the circle represents wholeness, completeness, fulfillment, unity, Dr. Fontana suggests. And we have the Celtic cross, the Buddhist wheel, the yin-yang symbol of the Taoist, even the dome of the Islamic mosque. And there are feelings associated with these symbols, like the circle, mostly tranquility and peace, because there's a sense of completion and fulfillment. Okay? And all of the religions have some form of circle dump, you know, because it's part of the collective. You see, religions kind of deal with the collective at their best level. At their worst level, they deal with the shadow of the collective. Punishment, pain, fear, sin. You're bad, you're evil. That's the shadow side of the collective when religion's not doing its job. It's shaming and guilting. It's not saying, let's go into this collective to find our destiny. It says, aren't you a terrible person? And you must do these things, these particular things, or you will go to hell. Which, by the way, was an ancient word for the unconscious. Okay? In the Greek, yeah, it was an ancient word for the unconscious, hell. Hello. Hades, the god Hades, is the king of the unconscious realm for Greek mythology. Right? It was translated into another mythology, religion mythology. Hades is a bad, bad place where you're going to burn. Okay? Hades is just the unconscious. Well, I would say just the unconscious. I almost did the sign of the cross. Because, I mean, the unconscious is very, very powerful. And I say that with reverence, doing the sign of the cross. That's not superstitious, but because I am a Catholic, and I'm proud of being a Catholic, especially a recovering Catholic. But these are powerful symbols, okay? And they're not to be, we can't put them in our pocket. You can't put the unconscious in your pocket, see? Because in the unconscious is where we get symbols too, like God. That symbol comes from the unconscious. All peoples from all nations, from all walks of life have had an unconscious reality called God. Okay? That comes from the collective unconscious, not the personal unconscious. That might deal with some specific historic religion, you know, or mom being Jewish or Catholic or Presbyterian or dad being Baptist. But when you get to the collective, you get to universals. Okay? And so the circle is one of these universals. But when you go into the religions, you will find these symbols everywhere. Because at their best, they deal in symbol making and symbol utilization and to tell us what exists at the very ground bed, the ground floor of our human and divine nature. Okay? So the good news today is that the exploration that we are doing, going to the personal unconscious through therapy and the collective unconscious, okay, through our spirituality, is what this is all about. Is what the journey of knowing ourselves is all about. And it's going to be one that will be certainly fearful at times, because we'll confuse these symbols with bad stuff. Because in a lot in our life, we have bad stuff happening with these symbols around. Okay? But please, don't confuse the depth of the symbol. Well, you're going to confuse it anyway. Confuse the depth, if you go ahead and confuse the depth of the symbol with your personal history, like the cross. Okay? And that's another symbol. That's a meeting point between heaven and earth. Okay? Let's get out of the guilt and shame for a while with all of what we might associate with the cross. But the cross is a meeting point between heaven and earth. It is also a tree of life in the Jewish Kabbalah. And even Jesus was said to have been hanged from a tree. Okay? Which was supposed to suggest Genesis with Adam in the tree of life, tree of good and evil. Okay? Jesus was the second Adam. It's supposed to be a very powerful symbol of life. And I love that when folks are wearing trees around their neck these days. Real trees with flowers and branches. Okay? That tree is, it has all the symbolic power of the cross. Meeting point of heaven and earth. Tree of life. The square suggests in strength, integrity, steadfastness. No wonder in the 50s, you know. when everybody, you know, OD'd on Elvis, that people said, oh man, he's square. She's square. Mom and Dad are square, man. Right? So to be square, until Huey Lewis in the News said it was hip to be square. But the square, if someone were square, they were uncool. And probably why is they were kind of holding on to old values, stable, steadfast, what you always, you know, expect, and it didn't have any novelty or newness about it. So it was square. But square archetypally, or square in the collective unconscious, suggests stability, steadfastness, loyalty, commitment. Okay? And lastly, the triangle, the Trinity, occurs in almost every form of religion, not only Christianity, but the some form of Trinity. My favorite is Divine Father, Divine Mother, Child. Divine Child. That's my favorite. There's also Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Right? And there's Hindu trinities, but I don't know of any right at the moment. It's not coming from my pre-conscious memory. But there are a lot of... And of course, we look at the 12-step program. We have the circle with the triangle. Triangle up is the male energy. Triangle down is female energy. Triangle up and down together, which is the star, is a balanced energy of male and female. Okay? So certainly the 12-step movement coming out of sort of male consciousness, you'd have the triangle that would be pointing upward. Right? Perhaps when we get ready, should I turn this off before I say it? Maybe one day our collective unconscious will be ready for new symbols, even for recovery. Okay? Which would have both triangles for male and female energy in the circle. Okay, I said it. You know, as we develop, as we grow, we have to allow ourselves, it seems to me, if we wish to grow, shifts in symbols and symbol making. But they're quite powerful. And they suggest, at their deepest level, of course, fulfillment in our entire nature. Fulfillment. So one can't access the personal unconscious, where our personal history is, or the collective, which is deeper, without relaxing the ego or one's hold on the conscious and preconscious mind. I believe this is the fundamental meaning of letting go and surrender. As I said before, there is a kind of letting go and surrender which gives one entry into the far reaches of the self, of the heart and mind. And it is not about letting go so that someone else can take control. No. That cultural meaning of surrender is associated with fighting and war and power struggles. No. Uh-huh. This surrender, I believe, is about relaxing our hold on our ego. It's not also about those quiet, internally recorded messages we gave ourselves when we looked upon the world of our models. You know what I'm talking about here, don't you? It's the life script. Now, the life script, is that a part of the collective unconscious or the personal unconscious? This is a test. Well, the life script that kind of goes on in pop psychology, the life script that goes on in sort of pop therapy, the life script that everybody sort of talks about is negative. Okay? That's because at some level, therapy only gets to the personal unconscious. It doesn't allow for the collective to emerge. Okay, so that's the realm of spirituality. But if therapy only gets to the personal unconscious, the life script is always negative. Now, all of us do have a negative life script. But I've got some good news for you. But let's talk a little bit about that negative life script. Yes, we all have a negative life script in our personal unconscious. And if we don't name that negative life script, We will be governed by it. We will be unhappy. We will be restless, irritable, and discontent. If we don't name that life's grip, and by the way, change it. Now, life scripts, negative life scripts, which come from our personal unconscious, can be so simple as to suggest an age where I will die because my father died. Okay? And the most simplest life script that I can think of is, you know, my dad died at age 56. At some internally recorded message, I feel like I'm going to die at that time too. Okay? And that can also be transferred from the mother. And that would be the most simple kind of life script. But there are more subtle ones. I'm just trying to use some of the ones that I've thought about in my own life. When I think about my dad, oh, by the way, the life script between 1 and 10, between ages 1 and 10, you will have your life script. You will play out your life script unless you challenge it, transcend it by finishing the job of knowing what it's about. But one will be, I believe that my dad between ages 1 and 10 said, I will drink like daddy, but it will kill me because I will like it too much. And it will make me happier than daddy and stronger than him because I will use more. But it will eventually kill me. One of my own would be, I must protect mommy. I can no longer be a child. And I must mistrust this child because it is not safe to be a child anymore here. Okay? That would be one of my own. Another that I'm thinking about would be, there is pain around me. Imagine from age 1 and 10. I am surrounded by pain. I must protect daddy, or I must protect mommy, or I must protect my sisters, or I must protect my brother from this pain at all costs. That's my job. People like this end up becoming nurses, doctors, priests, therapists, spiritual counselors. One of the most inglorious jobs known to man and woman. That you have to talk about spirituality already devalues it. Speaking about spirituality these days is worse than being a tax collector. But somebody's got to do it. So you might ask, you know, what is your life script? Those messages, those internal messages that you told yourself as a young boy between ages 1 and 10, when you look out upon the world of your mentors, who were probably not mentors at all, and you began naming things that you would live out for the rest of your life. Whether you go to Tibet and meditate with the monks or go into therapy, pick your choice, do something, probably easier to go into therapy than in a monastery in Tibet, when even the Tibetans can't go there. But it's about self-exploration. It's about meditation. It's about going into our dream life. It's about going into our personal unconscious and sharing our pain. And through that, it is finally about acceptance and forgiveness. Now, when I say forgiveness, I mean you may take a whole lifetime to forgive. I always underline this because some people feel really guilty about not being able to forgive their perpetrators or their abusers. Well, I say, hate them as long as you need to. Okay? Because if I'm going to guilt trip you into needing forgiveness, I've abused you spiritually. Right? I mean, I used to go to confession for things like that. I used to go to confession for things that people needed to apologize for me for. But rather than have them make amends to me, I would say, well, it must be my fault. I must be bad because this is happening to me, so that must be a sin. I didn't know the difference, you know. I mean, how can a child sin? A child can't sin. You do not sin. Okay? You cannot sin. Unless you get to being an adult and you've had all these chances to grow up and make amends and you don't, then you can sin. Okay? You're not sinning. doesn't exist. All you are is full of grace and life and hope and beauty. But some of us, when we grew up, very, very early on, we were told things that simply were not true about who we were. And I know there are basically two camps of human beings. One camp says that we're essentially evil, and the other camp says we're essentially good. And there's that weird camp that thinks good fights evil and good finally wins or something. Some kind of Lone Ranger spirituality or Star Wars spirituality. You know? And we're basically in that camp, in one or two of those camps. Essentially good, essentially evil. Okay? So, the camp that I am, I'll go ahead and tell you, you know, we're essentially good. We're perfect. We're all of what we need to be. We have all the wisdom that we need when we come into the world. We have all the spiritual wisdom we need. Now, we don't have something called human wisdom. We don't know how to walk. We don't know how to calculate. We don't know how to drive cars. And so we need to learn that stuff. There's a lot we're dumb about. Okay, but we're spiritually very, very wise. And we probably don't need to know much at all. People, in fact, need to sort of stay out of the way. And we might not be abused spiritually. Spiritual abuse is about a lot of guilt and shame and fear stuff that is handed us when we're kids. And that's not real spirituality. That's not authentic spirituality at all. That's just some guilt trip made up by wounded human beings. So the good news that I give you this morning. So that negative life script, look at, find, name, transcend. But what I want to tell you all today is I believe, and of course I'm stepping out on a limb, but I've done that before. I believe that there is a life script in the collective unconscious that we all have, every one of us, and that we knew about when we were little too. We not only took those negative messages in, you know, even therapy can be shaming, you know, that we only have this negative life script and aren't we bad, we got to name that. I really believe that minimizes the power and the depth of mind. We have a life script that exists in the collective, and that's why we came to this planet. And believe you me, when I was in the Catholic Church and I saw the priest in his vestments bow and he raised his hands, that to me was about a life script that I find important. It wasn't about the false hero. It wasn't about the caretaker. It wasn't about anything false. It was something very whole and something very powerful and about the collective unconscious. And I saw that as a child. I said yes to that. I said yes to that. I wanted to be that. I saw that was what being a human being meant. To be reverent and in awe to a higher power. And that's still ingrained in my psyche. And I will claim today that that is part of my own collective, which is also, by the way, yours. Collective is collective, you know. But that's something about my destiny, and it's something about your destiny. And when I saw in Israel, when I was on the way to climb this mountain before Egypt took it over from the Jews, the monastery of Catherine, is it the monastery of Catherine of Siena? I'm not sure. But I remember on the way, we woke up in the morning in our tents and on the beach in the distance as the sun was rising, this Bedouin, this Arab Bedouin, got off of his camel and I saw him bow and prostrate himself on the sand to the morning sun. And I knew that that was the same thing that I saw when I was a young boy and I saw the Catholic priest raise his hands up to God and bow in reverence. That was it again. And it came to me again. And it bubbled up. It emerged from the collective. I said, yes, that has something to do with my life script that is a positive life script, that is about joy, that is about fulfillment, that is about awe, that is about a sense of wonder.